哎呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀嘿，哎呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀嘿呀呀嘿呀嘿。Elder Voices, a window to the past, a door to the future.
Ay, 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 hey, ay, ay, hey.
My name is Arthur Guy Martin. My Inupiat name is Gingok. And I was born in Nome in 1942, April 5th, 1942. At the old hospital on 2nd Avenue. I was fortunate enough to be with my grandma Garney at Fort Davis. There were only two or three people living down there. You know, we almost have a village there, you know, which is good. When I was down there with Grandma Garney, Poyuna, her first name is Poyuna, respectfully, we lived right near the river there. And you could walk over and we fish for tomcods and flounder. The flounder are real small, but they're tasty. And what we did there was we put them away, we dried them, and we had half dry and all that stuff. Shared that with our extended family up here. That's a big part of subsistence. You do what you can in gathering food and continuing tradition, continuing the culture, and then to continuing what the elders pass on. It sounds funny, I used to like to pick berries and greens because I love eating them. That's a responsibility too, you know, to sit around and pig up food and not participate in gathering. That's a no-no, unless you're really down and out like Lazarus in the Bible. Other things I enjoy is eating the subsistence caught food. For years I shared that and I learned that from our customs, and it's still a big cardinal rules. It's a big rule that any young man or young lady that gets their first animal by hunting has to share, has to give it away. You take nothing from that first animal. You have to give it away. You're taught you won't take a hair off that animal, not a half ounce of flesh. It's a gift and it has to be done that way. The importance of that is because, first of all, it's a custom and tradition, and it shows respect. Usually goes to a person that can't hunt anymore and a tradition of sharing. So if a lady, for instance, her husband dies, that first caught animal goes to that widow or to a family that's unable to hunt. It's very, very important. We in turn take the time to teach our young folks. Doesn't matter if they're family or not. You teach your family first, and then if they have a friend or a child that does not have a parent, there's no question. You just take them along with you and they learn that way, skinning a beaver or whatever. The elders taught us to respect the animals. I mean, not to bow down in front of them, but we had certain rituals and they still practice some of it. And grateful for that, so we could pass that on to our youth. It also reminds us of our differences in seasons. Down here, we'd be able to pick greens at a certain time of the year, or berries. A little ways away, you have to do it earlier or later. That's pretty much the norm. We've had off seasons where it's all screwed up. I started noticing that anyway in about 1956. You talk about climate change, we're very aware of that. We don't panic because our elders told us there were cycles. Cold, cool, warm, and again, cold, cool, warm. So we look at it as how we adapt. It's still a staple in our diet, which is for eating and enjoyment and sustenance, but also the act of collecting food is, in my estimation, what elders told me is spiritual and well-being. I didn't understand that till I got older and started building a vocabulary and trying to understand what the elders were teaching us. There are always reasons for how we act and what we do in life. If we're content, then we tend to act normally, if you will. You tend to remember what you're being taught. You tend to share with others a little more. You tend to laugh more. You have respect for others. when something happens that creates disharmony, then like any other human, you get cranky and you may or not say something that would be cruel or semi-cruel. So that's what I mean by well-being and spiritual. We really hope to show our young children, young adults, what our ancestors are doing and why it's important spiritually, why it's important for well-being. Culture and well-being, I keep going back in spirituality, not just sustenance, not just eating the food. It all three go together. You break one of those three principles and it leads to social behavior that may or may not be analyzed at this time. And so that's what I mean by well-being, spirituality, and sustenance. It's tradition to practice subsistence and to practice it in a way that has been practiced by our ancestors and then more recently by our elders. It's part of our makeup. You take away tradition or you break tradition, you're interfering with the other principles in our culture and our subsistence and also our spirituality. At our Sitnasak Corporation, based in Nome, we have an elders committee and I'm an advisory member on that. And one of the things that's just so exciting every year is they do a subsistence calendar. Within the calendar, it doesn't just have January, then the Inupiat name. We have photos and small words that explain subsistence gathering, cutting fish, and we have pictures of our elders doing it so it won't go away. In other words, you can sit with someone one-on-one and talk to them and look at their horn-rimmed glasses. It's not like showing them actual photos of people working at subsistence, cutting fish, hanging fish, cutting up meat, marine mammals, and hanging the meat up for later use, and picking berries shows people actually doing it. And some might say, well, what's the big deal about that? Here's the big deal about that. You're actually watching people practice subsistence, picking berries and greens and other activities. So I'm real excited about the elders calendar, and we have a lot of people that share to pass on to our youth actual photos, actual words and recipes, and that will help educate and help pass on to our youth what our elders were doing. It's not living in the past, it's continuing our culture. The naysayers will say, well, you're living in the past. We're not living in the past. We honor the past and we're moving ahead. My wife and I have five children, and just like any other family, they're different. And once in a while we heard them say, oh, you like so-and-so better than me, and we love them all. In fact, it's a special day. Our son's coming in from leadership training with our local native corporation, and his daughter's 20 days old. He saw her for a few days, and now they're going to be reunited with his honey and his daughter. So it's kind of a special day, and maybe they're run-of-the-mill to any other family, but to a lot of our families up here and in our villages especially, when one of your siblings or your mother or your father are out on a trip, it seems like they're gone for days and days, you know, weeks and months. And it's a mini celebration when we get together, because we all went to camp together to fish, and families pretty much stayed together. That's how you learn the staples of our subsistence way of life, how we gather food and share with other families. My wife is King Islander, and she calls me a dime eater. Two different islands, but they have similar ways of gathering food, similar ways of preparing food and putting food away. And when we taught our children, or showed them and guided them, we don't use that word teach all the time, show by example, they learned both ways. They learned the King Island way, and they learned the Daimi way from my grandmothers. So it enriches the whole scheme of things, putting things away, because it shows you an alternative to putting certain foods away. It enriches us because there may be little nuances that will help. Knowing two ways of preparing food and storing food really enriches the family. You have two different traditions in the household, which in my estimation and what my grandmother explained to me was having two households enters into two histories, two different parts of our region. Our customs were all basically Inupiat, but we have slightly different dialects, and we have also slightly different ways of putting food away and slightly different ways of hunting. And each family is different, but we still have similar protocol, in other words, similar living manners. That's what our elders insist on, was to have manners, no matter if you're angry inside, put that aside and treat one another with respect. We feel lucky in our household that we were able to draw from my wife's father, Tuxuk, and his King Island people, the richness of their tradition and culture, which they continue to this day, singing and dancing, drumming, and things like this that perpetuates their culture. It's been proven scientifically that if a person speaks one or maybe more than one language, they have a better understanding of communication because it's slightly different. Also, what it does, it gives respect for another person's point of view, which is very important. I was lucky enough to, like so many others, live in two different worlds. When I was a newspaper boy, selling a newspaper, Nome Nugget, three times a week, it got me all over Nome. And I met a lot of the old miners from the early 1900s, Norwegians and Swedes and other ethnic background people that were still alive. They're all gone now, but I was lucky enough to go into their homes and hear their stories, just as well going into our native homes and hearing their stories. I was like to say, I had like 16 mothers and never ran out of food because you deliver the newspaper after school 3 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, and Friday. Every house that always feed you, especially if they knew your family. So by the time I got home, my mother would be cooking and I'd look at the plate and my stepdad would say, "What the heck, we work hard for the money to feed you. Can't lie." So I finally told him I've been eating for years on the paper route, fresh baked bread, cookies, meat, fish, all around town. The difference between cultures, where the old miners and our elders had two different ways of life, but they still got along. And I think the lesson of that is cooperation. For how far we've come as a community, how far we've come to learn to work together and cooperate. And I think that as elders, it's our responsibility to show that too. We're being more civil to one another. We're accepting each other as equals. A lot of the organizations have changed. Before it was several organizations were non-Native only. They've changed some of the organizations where they accept everybody. I'd like to see more of that. Suffice to say, we want to promote cooperation with any agency. We want to partner with them to make our region and our town, our corporation, in cooperation again, make things better for us and to help understand each other's culture and respect it. And at the same time, be realistic enough to know things have changed and be able to adapt and change with it and respect that change, long as it's done in a civil manner and where it benefits all of us. I guess it's like a sunrise. That's what gives hope. We're learning to be civil with one another, We're learning to cooperate with the agencies that still control our traditional subsistence way of life, our culture, and still maintain being a citizen of Alaska to follow the Alaska Constitution and the federal laws. I think to have patience and work with them. Heck, don't argue with them, make a partner out of them. And it's not bragging or anything, it's just do it. It might take a little while, but you can do it. It took them 2,000 years, meaning the scientists, to find the gates of Persia. We have hope. We don't have to go 2,000 years to build cooperation between agencies and everyone else. That's the hope. When I was growing up, when we were around elders, I don't remember anybody telling me to keep quiet, but I just did and listened and watched. Listened and watched and learned that way. And the only time I ever heard an elder speak up loud is if we didn't listen. And they didn't scream at you, they just raised their voice slightly and let you know. Their role within the community, as far as I remember, was we had to respect them first. Secondly, they were around longer than we were, and they had their elders' knowledge. Every time there's an elder, it keeps growing, and that's why our verbal stories and lessons are lasting this long. Now we're looking at programs that will be more modern in conveying information to our youth, which I'm excited about, very excited about. It won't go away. It'd be like old movies being regenerated, made digital and stuff like that. So nothing will change. The custom, the tradition, and how to do it will be preserved. So I'm very excited about that and excited to be with the Nome-based Native Corporation, Sitnasauk. And their board of directors and their committees are all for perpetuating our culture, our history, and our subsistence way of life. We really hope to show our young children, young adults, what our ancestors are doing and why it's important spiritually, why it's important for well-being. You could show them how they prepare food, how they catch, hang fish and cut up meat and pick berries, you know, and pick greens, different kinds of greens. I want it in our regular school education curriculum. We learn all about George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. Why not learn a little bit about the people that were here first and their cultures? So if we show, as elders, interest in showing our youth our culture, tradition, heritage, and subsistence way of life, that will further be engaged in other programs where we're not just giving, like I say, lip service, we're actually doing something. We have a lot of talent out there, and hopefully we can do something region-wide in passing on to our youth at a sustained level our tradition, culture, and subsistence way of life and other customs that we have that we still respect. I'd like to say that we're more aware of our responsibilities as elders today. I'd say acutely responsible to our youth. And we challenge ourselves to take the time and make sure that our youth will benefit from our ancestors and our elders. The most important thing I'd like to share with the youth today is ask an elder. It doesn't have to be your own grandmother, grandfather, Aka. Ask an elder, and if that elder doesn't understand you, go to another one. But before you go to another elder, ask him, please, who could I talk to? And then the elder will tell you who to see, or he may give you a name. That's how you find things out. Be respectful, but don't give up too. As youth, they have their responsibility to ask, not to sit there and wait to be told. They have to share with us. And mostly, some of us modern elders will jump at a kid who looks like and ask a question, can I help you? I think the most important thing is to pass on to the youth that they're allowed and encouraged, and questions are welcome to the elders. And that's how you learn. And I hope the elder will say, hey, when you get older, please pass that on to people that are younger than you. On that, I just got back from the Elders and Youth Conference in Fairbanks at the Alaska Federation of Natives. One of the things I participated in as an elder was the election of a youth leader. It came to me as an elder to ask them a question. I asked these five young ladies, if you go to an elder, ask for information in a nice way, and they said, no, go somewhere else, no. What would you do? One of the young ladies stepped forward. She said, Mr. Martin, I would go and ask another elder. I said, perfect. That's two ways of trying to explain responsibility. It's up to us as elders to keep making noise. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. It's up to us to take the responsibility as elders to help enhance all those values that we have. You know, it's not the idea that we're waving a flag saying Native this and Native that, but it is our responsibility to pass on our tradition, culture, and ethnic backgrounds and history to our youth, especially subsistence, how we gather our food and respect it, and how we share. And I'm looking around the table, I see people sharing, you know, and I'm extremely proud of that. We need to take the responsibility as elders, take the time, sit at committee meetings, and make suggestions to our board of directors who are in charge of the corporation to promote programs and to promote civility and promote ways to, for instance, fish and wildlife management so we can get together and hopefully don't run our gathering of our food in a political manner rather than a scientific manner. In a way, we're all the same. But we want to take the responsibility to show that we have the fortitude to pass on our knowledge to our youth. Just because we're getting old doesn't mean it excuses us from life. We have to, as elders, take the time and responsibility and show youth what their elders and their elders' elders were doing and how to keep our tradition, culture, and subsistence alive. Accepting responsibility and doing it with a happy face. Smile at the youth and say, hey, this is what I know. But someone else might know a little bit more about that subject. What gives me hope now is a lot of young people taking interest and a lot of elders taking interest. Taking the time to be responsible to one another, knowing that it's important. Very, very important that we continue to accept responsibility and also continue to present to ourselves as elders and to our youth other scenarios, other alternatives, other possible solutions to any of the problems we have. Very, very important. And it can be done. Give them hope, and it gives us hope. I guess it's just a cool time to be alive.
You've been listening to Elder Voices, a production of KNOM.